Okay, so firstly, before today's show, we just want to take a moment to say thanks to everybody who's supporting us on Patreon. For just £4 a month, you can get early access to all of our podcast interviews that we're doing at the moment. We've recently had Charlie Hull, Hudson Swafford, and we've got one coming out this week with Matthew Baldwin. We've had plenty of golf insights, and for £4 a month, you get early access to those interviews, plus the video to enhance your viewing experience. And you'll also get access to the videos for our weekly review podcasts, including this one today.
And like we said, it's a support mechanism for podcasts because we don't make any money and we put a lot of effort in, don't we? So it's just a little thing that people can go and support it. And if not, just listening is enough to support us as well. So we thank you for that as well.
Yeah, we really do appreciate all of that. And we hope you enjoy today's show. Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by Kevin and Mark, as always, and we've got a guest, Mr. Connor Wynne-Stanley. How are we?
Cheers. Yeah, good, mate. Good, mate. Thanks for having us, boys.
You're welcome. What's the script at the moment with the European Tour when he is back out there, when he's open to start?
I think it's looking like Kenya at the minute, back to about weeks out in Kenya, yeah. Bit of sun, like... Lovely. It just got a bit warmer today, didn't it, as well, to be fair. But it's
roasting today.
Perfect winter's day for a bit of golf today, wasn't it, to be fair?
I mean,
not allowed, are we?
still cooked up in the house, I know. Hopefully not for too long. So as part of our podcast shows, at the beginning, we go through a couple of questions and a bit of industry news in the golf. And obviously one thing that's hit the news this week is the PGA of America allowing distance measuring devices for the PGA Championship, the Women's PGA Championship, and the Seniors PGA Championship as well. So good to just get you on as a caddy who obviously doesn't use them in a tournament environment, but potentially if this goes well, could start using them in the future. Just to get your opinion on the whole saga, really.
Yeah. I think obviously the reason for doing this is to try and speed up slow play. Which, if we go out for a knock on a Saturday or whatever and we want to find out how far the flag is, great, like the Bushnell's rapid, you just get it out of your bag, zap, bang, off we go. But these boys on tour, like, they're so, like, particular with yardages. They want to know more numbers than just the flag. They want to know the cover yardage. They want to know the back edge yardage, where we want to put from. Like, the Bushnell doesn't tell you that. Obviously, it will tell you how far it is, but, I mean... Like the slope, are they going to allow slope? Because if they don't, then you have in your book, if it's +3 uphill, -3 downhill. So you got to get your book out anyway. So yeah. I'm like, if you're going to speed it up, you're going to have to like neutralize getting rid of a book. But that's never going to happen. Like you're not going to get rid of a book because that's your Bible. That's your secret, really, for getting around a golf course.
That's it. And what goes into the book then? So obviously comparing that to Bushnell, because I use a Bushnell when I play.
It is
a convenience thing because at the golf club I play at, there's yardage on the sprinkler heads, but not all golf clubs have that.
Exactly, yeah.
You do need to rely on something. So it is quicker for us when we're playing a knock, like you say. But what type of stuff goes into what you do?
Yeah, I mean, well, firstly, like actually getting the yardage isn't overly difficult. Well, when you get there in the practice rounds, you'll have the guys on the European Tour have already marked out all your different coloured dots in the fairway, that symbol, how far it is to the front edge, which is in your book. So let's say we've got a yellow cross that's 200 to the front. Our ball's 10 yards in front, so we'll pace off from that. We've got 190 to the front. Let's say the flag's on 15 yards or so, then you just add your 15 and you get your number there. And that's not the world's slowest thing to do, is it really? Like you're probably doing that in your headers. Your mate's hitting, or you're doing it as you're walking up there, you're flicking the book out, you're having a look at it. Anyway, most pros, like, they do the yardage themselves as well, so you're both doing it. So it's not a case of, like, oh, my God, I'm 50 yards further back because I've just gone for a dump in the toilet. He can do it as well. Like, that's fine. But, like, as far as the book goes, like, you imagine, I know we spoke about the Sky Caddy does have everything on there, but, again, I don't know what they've said about having a Sky Caddy compared to a Bushnell. But, like, look at the blind stuff. Like, how can you see any of that with a Bushnell? Well, that's you want
to say that because a distance measuring device, because I see Ray Mark edged away from the word Bushnell at the start. Distance measuring device can be a Sky Caddy. Surely that measures the distance and it's a device.
Yeah, I mean,
like by, it is by a definition. Distance
measure, so, yeah, like, I've never really had much experience with a Sky Caddy. I don't know if it would say if it's uphill, downhill, but again, that's another question that I don't know. That's left in the PGA zone.
The one that sponsors the show, Arcos, they tell you everything. It's the wind, the temperature, the uphill, downhill. It tells you the lot.
Jeez. So if they're going to put me out of business, like if they're trying to win as well.
The PGA,
like you play, you might as well get one of them, innit?
But like you say, though, the PGA of America have turned around. They said they're not allowing the slope. They're not allowing any club recommendations. So all they're allowing
you
to get
the book out. I mean, if you're hitting it up your nose, like let's say, I don't know, S&A is not overly the most hilly course in the world, is it? So bad example, like, but maybe like seven. Hitting into seven, what does it say on you on the book? Whatever, it's going to be a couple of yards, and then boys are that like accurate and stuff with hitting numbers with the track mans and the quads they have. They're going to want to know that. You ain't just going to go, yeah, I reckon it might be about five uphill.
Yeah,
well, that's not good enough for them boys. Like, you're getting a clip round the head there if you get that. Well,
how do you, in the practice days and stuff, how do you determine how high it is?
Well, essentially, you actually get there, it'll say in your book. It'll say that it's plus four, plus five, but you check with the Bushnell. Par threes, especially, like, you stand on the tee, you want to check if it's right, because they're more often or not where, like, in the caddy, if he's hitting it straight at the flag, you're thinking, like, oh, I hope this ain't long, or I hope this ain't short, because he's getting in the neck for 150 yards.
Definitely. Well, you can use the slope, can't you? So on when you walk on the course and you practice these.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where your Bushnell is your best mate, really. Like you can find out as much as you want to find out that the book doesn't show you on there. And that's why for me, I'm not the biggest fan of him being in competition, because let's say I'm going out there and I'm Bushnelling everything. Like I've got so many notes in my book. I've got this tree is 280 off the tree. It's 240 to get over that bit of the water. This is that. This is this. So many numbers. I've done my own work as good as I can. But the guy next to me has just rocked up on Thursday morning. He's still drunk and he's just going zap, zap, zap. I'm like, hold on a minute. I've slugged around here for 2 days now and you're just doing the same thing.
Means you can go and get drunk on the Wednesday now.
No, you're right. But I'll get up on the Thursday.
That's it, yeah. You'll still be drinking on the Thursday.
You could therefore recover better than me.
Brilliant.
But, Connor, so do you know, say, how long have you had here for Richard?
Ooh, be coming up just over 2 years. 2 years.
So you were with him on the lower tours and stuff?
I was, mate, yeah. Yeah. You're a pro. So,
when he's playing his club championships, when he was coming through, was he using books then? Like, when did the book actually?
Yeah,
when did he start using it?
Great, great point. Like, that's a lot of the guys get taught on international setups. They go through course strategies and this is how to work a book, pace of yardage. I mean, again, like it's not rocket science to count your steps off a dot and stuff like that. But the skill of using it and really analyzing it, I suppose, like there's an element of. You just got to learn yourself. You might do a book compared to me so differently, but yours ain't wrong, mine ain't wrong. It's just you want to look for certain stuff. Rich spent 4 years out in America at Nova in Florida, so he probably learned the majority of it out there, but you bang on. Like, I personally feel like instead of going this way where we're going, let's use distance measuring devices in the golf, in the top level golf, let's actually break it down, scale it all back to let's get a book in our hand as soon as we can. Yeah, maybe not on a Saturday monthly medal with 150 guys playing with the mates, like, because it's going to take a while, like, but like at elite amateur level and like the lower mini tours and stuff like that, I think it'd be great to not sit, ban the distance of measuring devices, but like put them aside and like actually use this now, because you're going to need it if you climb this ladder, so then it's not a whole different ball game for you.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense as well, though, because then when they get used to using that book and being familiar with that book, and then they do climb that ladder, it's going to naturally speed up play anyway, because they'll trust 100%, the book and know the book.
100%. I remember out on Europe Pro, like, when you could use the Bushnells and stuff, and exactly what I've just been saying to you boys about having to get the slope out of the book and working out covers and stuff, you was doing that, and it just become a bit more of a hassle, if anything, to actually get it out of the bag, put it back in the bag, then get your book out, and it's just a bit like, well, why don't we just use the book? We've just got the book out. Let's just use that, because the Bushnell doesn't show us everything. So yeah. My notes ain't in the Bushnell. They don't flag up on the screen. I mean, it'd be pretty cool if it flagged up and said, don't go long or whatever like that. But then again, I'm back in the bar then, aren't I? But like, it is good. And I don't know, the guys on the Euro Pro say like their round times are faster than the main tours, and they use Bushnells. But I think there's all sorts that come in play there. Course setups. I'm not slagging off your pro money. Courses for a minute. Like, it's great. Yeah, money for one, exactly. You're sweating out over 400 grand compared to 40 quid. It's a different world,
yeah.
Isn't it? That?
Yeah, definitely.
But you're looking at like course setups and the roughs cut down quite a bit. You're playing on more like courses we'll be used to playing compared to these 7,400 yard monsters we need eat rough. Like that's different. Yeah. It's going to take longer playing one of them golf courses. You've got to walk for longer for starters. Yeah. And the green books. The green books are the one that go for me. If someone said to me now, like, Connor, you're in charge of speeding up pro golf, what'd you do? And it's green books, like, straight away to go. As much as like me and Rich will use a green book, because like if I'm not using it, you're using it, you've got an advantage on me. You know the breaks, you know where the best place to putt from. Like, we're gonna use it. But the amount of time they take, like, you get down over a putt, I think it's right to left. Rich thinks it's right to left. The book says it's straight. We're like, what do we do here?
Yeah,
but there's that doubt that crops in, and that takes even longer. So,
but it's that again, that's an interesting point, because Shaq's, who's a friend of the show, David Shackley, he uses the exact same thing. He uses it out on the EU Legends Tour, the senior tour, and they use that, and they said it does speed up play using the Bushnell. If you want to speed up play even more, they remove the green.
Yeah. But again, back to that point of course setup is the one which for me takes the time. Like, again, I ain't slagging off the seniors tour, but there's no way they're stepping foot on a Valderrama or a Paris National, where it's a brutal track with a long rough and you've got to really like do some serious walking, because at the end of the day, like, no offense to the old guys, like the seniors, aren't they? They've done it. Like, yeah. I mean, not Shaq, because like he's not the oldest one of the bunch, like, is he? But you've got guys out there who's done it for a long time, and maybe they deserve it. Bit of a shorter walk now.
Yeah, well, I mean, Daniel Berg is a good example as well, because obviously he's won this week, and I've seen all the comments on Twitter and the frustrations about how long he was taking in his routine. Do you know,
before with the on the greens?
Stand over it with the marker, and does that go back to the green book, just wanting to get the exact?
Yeah, I mean, I watched it there on Sunday, but I'm not overly sure I've seen much of the book coming out. I mean, I don't know if they were looking at it somewhere else, but it. The way he was twisting it and moving it in the caddy behind, and I was just
what difference is him, the caddy being behind while he moves the ball when the marker's there, to the caddy just lining him up, like with what got banned?
That's
close to bending the rules, isn't it?
Exactly. That's exactly what I said to my old man, because if you essentially get that line right as the caddy's behind you, he's done as much as he could do to get the face right.
It's the same as lining you up, isn't it, really?
That's exactly what I said. I said it's the exact same.
I couldn't believe it.
That's next, isn't it? That's the next.
Yeah.
Got to be an announcement. Like, you can't be doing that. I was watching it like, I mean, fair play, like he's rolling him in, but it was like,
come on
a minute. It's like,
Yeah,
I agree there. That is sketchy.
What are your thoughts on, say, but like we were talking about the Arcos technology that gives you everything? And we know that you're there more than just to get the yardages for like reassurance, like to have a chat, to keep your mind occupied. Take a weight off your shoulders, literally, we're carrying the bag. So what are your thoughts on getting every bit of information that they possibly can have for like, and just giving it to them? And then all they've got to do is swing the club then. Do you know what I mean?
The wind, the slope,
give us an all technology.
Great point. But I think that technology would be great at kind of club golf level. I mean, obviously, it's great at pro golf, knowing all that. But if I went to Rich and said, like, everything this Arcos device is giving to you, he'd be just like, Con, shut up. Like, we don't do that. Yeah, I want to know this, this, and that. You know what I want to know? Like, all of this is going to fry my head. If that Arcos comes and says, like, it's 190.
You get all the information.
I'd look at the information.
And then you just have to deliver, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, again, but then for me, it's back to homework. And like, if you do your homework right, I suppose you're doing what that's doing. But if you don't do your homework right, that's your best mate, isn't it? If you want to roll up on a Thursday, like we said, still drunk, Arcos is great. Yeah,
you can't do your homework on the wind, because it could gust or you can.
Yeah, you can to a degree. Like, again, like we spoke about, you. To a degree, you know exactly where that wind's coming from. I mean, it can bounce around in the trees and stuff. And you check the forecast at the start of the day, how strong it's going to get. You know what your high gusts are. You know what your set standard wind is. you can get a feel for it, definitely. But I mean, at that exact second, there's no chance.
Yeah.
But again, I don't think that's legal, is it? Is that legal to know exactly how strong that wind is at that point?
Well, it's got a tournament mode on it, which takes it off.
All right, awesome.
What I'm saying is, it's not legal, definitely. But I'm saying, what are your thoughts on just getting it all and just...
Unreal. I think that's great. I think if you was to... I don't know. If Joe blogs and his Saturday comp there at SNA on a Saturday, we'll still have that. That's creating a bit of a talk-addy experience for a guy just playing his monthly medal. I think that's awesome. I can't really see a route for it in pro golf, because then I've got to go find somewhere else to do, and I'm happy with the sun on my back.
That's all you care about is your job.
Yeah, I'm not plugging that one. I think it's great.
Fantastic stuff, mate. Yeah. So yeah, you're against the Bushnells at the moment, then, are you? You think it's just there's more to it?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, again, like we said on a Saturday comp, I think I definitely have a. I use a Bushnell when I'm playing golf. But I think it does take a bit of the element of the skill of using the book and doing your own work and stuff. It's just a bit of a slapdash, quick, there you go, off you go.
Yeah, I think I'm inclined to agree with you. I think if you're using the book anyway and you're using the green book anyway and you're just adding the Bushnell, then there's no way it's going to speed up play, because all you do
is there's all sorts going on.
Advice and adding questions.
Yeah, and that's before we start arguing. before we start falling out.
I was saying last week, I don't know if you listened to the show or not, but I was saying last week, like, we should let all the golfers get on steroids, like, let them do, like, change all the rules so it's just easy, and let's go and see who can actually hit the furthest and who can do the best. Do you know what I mean?
That's probably a little modification tournament coming soon, isn't it? I mean, the way Bryson's doing everything, obscene, isn't it? A bit like...
He is enough.
But I think Bryson's his own level of an Arcos, and guy's just got it all to... a level of not many computers are getting to it.
Definitely. Yeah, he's definitely got more brain cells than any of us.
Yeah, that's one bag I'm not keen on jumping on. Like, I'm happy with I'm in Rich, use normal numbers.
Yeah, that's it. Definitely. Well, look, Connor, I appreciate you taking the time to speak to us.
We're gonna do a
full caddy series, and it'd be interesting to get you on and hear your full journey. And
awesome, mate. That'd be great.
And hopefully by that time you've got a W.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be even better. And then the bars are open back in Birkdale, and we'll go get hired and have a few beers.
Definitely. Looking forward to it, Connor. Yeah.
Top lads. Thanks for having me on, fellas.
No, you're very welcome, and look, wish you all the best this year if we don't speak to you before the first tournament.
Thanks, lads. Good luck. Thank you. Cheers, boys. Yeah, see you after. Top lads. Catch you after.
Some great insights there from Connor, wasn't it?
Oh, mate. Well, the only way to get a full... It's only affecting him, really, isn't it? Or, like, his profession. Like, we can talk all we want about it, but it's nice to hear someone who's actually, like, the work. He's basically just scared for his job, isn't he, really?
No, you're right. No, it's good. It's good to get how he feels about the whole situation, because he's there on a daily basis. He's having to go out and get these yardages and get all this information.
I do my own work, and he just rocks up drunk, and I'm like, well, why don't you just rock up drunk then?
That's right, though. Yeah, but will he get up? I know we wouldn't.
But yeah, it's good. It is good to see what goes into, like, what he does, and like the what them books are actually offering, and what level that you start using a book. Because I know I don't use a book.
Yeah,
I know I'm only club golf, but like, if I start playing Northern Order of Merit, will I start using a book? Or I don't think I would. To be honest,
no. I suppose we're not dialed in as much with yardages, are we? Whereas,
well,
they
might
know.
Not be.
I can safely say we there. So they know the difference between a 98 swing and a 99 swing or a 100 swing. Whereas me and you, if it's you tell me it's 120 or you tell me it's 135, I'm using the same club.
Yeah, I know the difference between it. It's 1 yard, but I don't know how to get it there.
But there is some other news as well. One interesting piece of news that I read: the use of CBD oil. It's on the rise in golf.
I've had my mum on that for a while, to be honest. She's been having it for, like, pain relief and different things.
That's
like
it's natural healing properties in it.
Yeah, well, it's the same as like normal, like, marijuana, but it doesn't have the THC, which has got the psychosis sort of effect of why weed is actually illegal. So it's the same sort of stuff. Yeah, it's good for, like, recovery, and, like, you can get it. We got it in, like, a balm. There's balms that you can get in your room. rubbing on your muscles, and then that'll like soak into your muscle and heal it. Or you can get the drops under your tongue, and then that'll give you, it'll help you as well. But I've seen a few of them actually puffing on it from the vapes and stuff.
Interesting. Yeah, I suppose it's...
Did you not know I was an expert on CBD there?
I do now. Thought I'd drop that news in, and I was like, didn't know I was speaking to Dr. Marijuana.
We talked the weed.
Yeah, so yeah, interesting week of golf there at the AT&T Pebble Beach.
It was, what you call it, I don't, not a fail, but another week that was, that could have been for Jordan, big Jordan.
Yeah, it is. It's again, it's one of them. He gets us all hyped up and ready on a Saturday night thinking, oh, here we go. This is it. This is the week. And then he just, within 5 or 6 holes, you're like, oh, Jesus, anti-climax.
I know, two hole out eagles. And I was, when he held that one on the Saturday, I was just like, that he's going to do this.
This is that. How good was that?
Yeah, unbelievable, wasn't it?
I know, I couldn't believe my eyes when I seen it go in, but to do it twice as well.
Did you see, though, I didn't say it on the podcast, but I did call that he would, well, I said a bit later, I said, you'll back nine Sunday be leading and he'll crumble, but he actually crumbled before, and he just mustn't be there mentally.
It's interesting you should talk about eagles there, though, because Daniel Berger, 4 eagles, enough to give him his 4th win.
Put on the last one.
Unbelievable, wasn't it? To be fair, though, it takes some stones to do what he'd done on the Saturday, just winging that drive out of bounds. And then to do that and then to come back, and like he says, he's hit his best ever 3-wood he's ever hit in his life there.
Yeah, well, and he said his best ever putt as well. So that's the best putt he's ever hit.
We talked about just putting there. It's going to be an interesting conversation, that, isn't it? With, I don't understand the whole routine process of standing up, lining it up, keeping the ball marker there, lining up behind it, and then waiting, stepping away, picking your ball marker up, and then hitting the thing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what Connor just said as well. He knows he's not allowed to do it, but that's as close as you're getting to lining someone up, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think as well, do you know a couple of things on the rules here that I want to talk about from this AT&T? So that Maverick McNeil, what's his name, McNeil?
Maverick McNeil, yeah. McNeely won.
Yeah. So McNeely won, yeah. So he comes second by 2 shots. Granted, Berger made the eagle on the last.
Yeah.
And granted, Berger had a bit of a rules thing as well. But McNeely, he's there and he's got his ball and he knows it's fluffy in the rough. He's chipping and it obviously falls into, off. The club makes it move, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, he's putting it down, yeah.
Yeah, so what I was saying is, I don't know if this is allowed or not, but are you allowed to get a ball out your bag and put it on the grass and put your club down to see how the ball's going to fall? But it's not actually practice. No.
No, it's practice. It is practicing.
Why is it?
Well, because you're practicing to see how the grass reacts.
I'm practicing to see if your ball's going to fall, yeah, it's going to move.
Yeah, but that's exactly the same as chipping it onto the green to see how fast it goes.
No, not, because you're chipping on the green, you're getting a judge for the distance and a judge for the bounce and a judge for the feel. But this is literally, you're just seeing it. Like, if my ball's in that position, you put it there and you put your club and then it falls, you're like, right, I'm going to start from that far away now. No, not having that one.
I just don't think we'll get away with that. We've just been talking about how to speed play up, and then you've got Rory getting a couple of balls out of his bag, putting it either side of the ball to see whether or not they're going to get into
That's what came into my mind when I seen it fall over. I thought, why are you just getting the ball to have a check?
I just can't see that one going. I just can't see that
anyway.
One going, man.
Oh, well, sorry, Maverick, we can't save you on that one. But who you can save is Daniel Berger, which he won by 2 anyway. But if that rule did come into play and he didn't get that penalty, he would have been like leading, but he would have been ahead of Berger, wouldn't he? Until when Berger's going down the last.
Well, he'd have been 17 under, yeah, because he finished 16 under. So that birdie that Maverick got on 18 would have got him to 17 under. And then 1 shot behind, it's a lot more pressure.
Exactly. A lot more pressure for the start. And did you see actually what happened? He hit it, it went over the path, and then it went onto the grass. So the grass is there, and then there's the boundary of the course is there.
Yeah.
Which is, that's out of bounds, because it's out of the boundary. Which
the other side of that path, yeah.
Yeah, but there was a white line on the right side of the path. So he could stand there, and he could physically have played that ball. It was there, perfect, but it was just on the other side of a painted line for that week. And I'm like, The course is there. It's fair enough. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, because there was a fence to somebody's garden, wasn't there, right next to it? And it's
I
understand if it goes to the fence and you've got to climb over that it's out of bounds, but I totally agree. If it's on that little major grass, because if that bounces a little bit harder off the path, it hits that fence and probably comes back onto the path and rolls the other side of it, and it's in bounds.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Or put the stakes in the bush. Or make the bush the out of bounds. Obviously the listeners can't see this, but there was a foot of grass between the fence and the path, and the line was on the was closer to the path. And then I just thought it was dead funny. It was Berger picked his ball up and like done like a basketball throw of the ball over the fence into the garden.
I seen that, yeah. But you know, talking about that 18th hole, the cypress tree right in the middle of the fairway. Tom Hoagie, final knock. Hit it right at that tree and lost his ball. The tree is in the middle of the fairway. It went straight into the tree, yeah, and then he couldn't find it, so it didn't drop down. One of the caddies, I'm not sure whether it was Spieth's caddy or it was Hoagie's caddy, who got up the tree looking for it, and then because it was 3 minutes, time had lapsed and he couldn't find it, he hit it, and he hit the ball, his second ball, in the exact same position, but this time it went through the tree and came out the other side and was in the middle of the fairway.
Oh, and then how much is that costing him?
Well, this is it. I think he ended up with a bogey at the end, and maybe just outside the top 10 or finished top 10 for the tournament. I can't quite remember, but you're right. It's
costing him money because he's coming down the last, isn't he? And another shot, any shot is a place, isn't it?
Well, that's it. It's the money, but it's the FedEx points. There's a couple of tournaments. Hoagie's been up there, and it does that stop him getting into the WGC events and things. So on a Ryder Cup year as well, all this stuff's important.
Every penny counts, as they say.
But that wasn't the biggest driver of the week. Nate Lashley. We're going to talk about him.
Oh, mate.
What is he up to?
Nate Lashley. For a start, you put him for par and you walk off with a double?
Triple. So 150 yards in on 16, and he's tied for the lead at the time with Berger. Hits it long, chips it to 13 foot. So you got to, and to be fair, at the time, obviously you might want to fact check this, but I'm pretty sure he was strokes gained the putting leader for the week. His putting was phenomenal.
We'll say he is for the purpose of the story to build up a bit of excitement.
Thanks, Kevin. So he was strokes gained putting leader for the tournament. You'd watched it all day, and on the Saturday he was holding those 13 footers for fun. And so he knocks this 13 footer about 3 foot past, 4 foot past, misses the next one, four puts, and then he just goes whack and just slams his putter into the ground and then just walks away, doesn't repair it. So he's been getting slaughtered on the social media, saying that he's...
Has he been fined or anything?
He will do. I'm not sure whether he's being fined yet, but he will get fined for that 100%, yeah. So that's going to come out of his pocket, but then do you know how much he lost just off that alone?
How much?
£500,000. $500,000.
Up.
Yeah. So Maverick McNealy won 800K. Berger won 1.4 mil. McNealy 800K, there or thereabouts. And he ended up winning 300K. So £500,000 in difference. And he's been putting brilliant. So then if he'd have two putted, he'd have tied second with McNealy. So he'd have shared that pace. £500,000 difference, maybe just a bit less.
I wonder, like, I'd like to see what he actually put that down to. I didn't hear his interview afterwards, like, lapse in concentration, nerves, like, what is it?
It depends whether he's looking at leaderboards. You're pretty sure what has he won once before on tour, has he?
Yeah.
He's 38 years of age, so he's not getting any younger. So maybe that could have been 1.4 mil for winning.
Yeah, 38, man. Like, how old's Westwood? Like, how old are these other... 38's not old at all.
I know, yeah. I suppose it depends.
Prime of his life.
Same age as Tiger. What am I even talking about?
I just say six that day when Cantley had that 62 on the first day. Do you know what he was for his last 36 holes?
Well,
like, because obviously the last day of last week and then the 62 that he opened with, 21 under.
For how many rounds?
Two.
Oh, my God.
Mental, I don't
know. If he'd have won this week, he'd have been fifth in the world.
Really?
If he'd have won this week, he'd have gone to fifth in the world, Cantley, yeah.
They just throw them world ranking points around for no man's business, don't they?
And you're just stickler for you there, isn't it? You don't like that at all, do you?
I just think you need to be winning multiple times to be in the world top 10.
Yeah. But John, I've got a great one for you though. And we'll come on to him next. The 19-year-old left-handed sensation. Shot a 64 in his first round. Do you know what he shot second round?
Don't say 73.
73.
Oh my God. Has he?
He shot a 73 round too, yeah.
I've actually been doing a fact find on him, like look finding all mad information about him, like a new segment I was going to talk about, like an one to watch segment.
That'd be interesting, yeah.
And I know he's already buried, like he's already on the tour, but
he's played double figure events, hasn't he? Like yeah. 10, 11 events or something.
But I'd say maybe people that are listening and that don't really watch the golf or like don't really watch much PGA Tour, it could be good to maybe find someone a bit younger. Because like, he come on the scene at 17, this fella.
Was he that young?
Yeah, 17, got a sponsor's invite. So he's only 19 now, isn't he, as you said?
Yeah.
And he was the world number one junior when he was 17. Like, he's 16, going on 17, he's shooting 63s at Pinehurst. So he's tipped to come through, and he won the like the Dustin Johnson World Junior Golf Championship record holding -10, and then he was going to go to college, and he said school doesn't suit him, so we come onto the PGA Tour 17, didn't really know what was happening, like didn't really get his bearings, and he was saying in his interview that the lockdowns really helped him find out what he wants to do, what he needs to work on, get a plan together, and then start making a runner. The PGA Tour, like if it was competing against the big boys, sort of thing.
Well, look, if you're opening up with a 64 and you're a couple off the league, got after day one, and you've got the top players in the world playing, all right, it was a shortened field. The big superstars weren't there, but you still had the likes of your Paul Casey, Patrick Cantlay, players who were winning.
Exactly, yeah.
Who were winning. They're going to carry on winning this year by the sounds of things. Casey and Cantlay up there every single week, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. And not just a 64, an 18 out of 18 greens, 64.
Wow, that was unbelievable, yeah.
At Pebble Beach, first time since Ryan Palmer, 2008.
Unbelievable. Like, that was amazing to see. It seems like we spoke about the lefties last week, didn't we? Bobby McIntyre breaking into the top 50 in the world. Obviously, yeah. we quoted that as the best lefty in the world. But it seems like a change of the tides, isn't it? Where you've got Mickelson and Bubba
of the lefties.
Yeah, Mickelson and Bubba on the way out. And then you've got Battier and McIntyre coming in to take over.
It's amazing that the left-handed is that minority. Because I reckon most people who are left-handed just get given right-handed hand-me-down golf clubs to start.
Phil Mickelson's right-handed and he was given left-handed clubs.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So it's like, yeah, whatever, then it's money, amount of money again.
Opposites attract. It is bad. But I know an unbelievable tournament, and Daniel Berger takes his fourth PGA Tour championship. He's won back-to-back seasons now. Do you know what's interesting?
Well, then, Daniel Berger, I don't not like him, but I just don't really care when he's on the telly. Well, one of them sort of golfers.
He was asked in his post tournament conference whether or not he seems himself as an underrated golfer, and straight away he went, yeah, I am underrated. He played in Florida State team at Brooks Koepka, didn't he? He come up through the ranks with those guys, and he said, I know that I can make it as world number one, and people might laugh at that, but I know what my abilities are. So, being said, do you think he's got it in him?
I don't know. I'd have to have a full look at his other three wins. Has he ever won when all the big boys are there? Has he fended off a Dustin Johnson? And Patrick, like Reed, and all the other big boys. Like, I don't know why I've just mentioned Reed as a big boy there.
Yes.
What's just the edit? Edit.
Edit alert.
Why did they just say Patrick Reed? Man, I feel sick.
He is, though, isn't he? We've spoke about him. He is one of the big
boys.
Dustin
Johnson or Bryson's and your Rory's, as he fended. Like, I'll have to have a look at that. But you know what? If he keeps winning, how can he not be world number one?
I know. Well, this is it. I'm not sure. That's his fourth win. He's 15th in the world rankings now, and he's 10th in the FedEx. He's only 27 years of age. Been a pro for 8 years.
Well, it's like, I can't remember who said it, but the goal has got to be to try and be the best. Like Sean Tandro, your goal has got to be to try and get to the best possible standard you can get to. Like, and that is the world number one golfer. So whether it's unrealistic or not, if you're out there winning on tour, you're giving your best sort of shot to get there.
Yeah, if you've, like you say, if you've been out there and you've won a golf tournament, why would you ever not step on the first tee on a Thursday and not think that you can win it?
Exactly.
You'd be a fool too, wouldn't you, if you know your capabilities? But it's a good point that you make, and we'll check that out to see whether he is winning these tournaments with the shortened field, or whether he's going toe to toe with the big fellas like Patrick Reed and beating them.
We've had a bit of a listener complaint.
Okay.
We're still not doing enough on our fact checks.
Okay.
We're not coming, and that comes from my brother. That. I said, you don't even fact check them anyway, you're just saying it, you don't fucking back it up.
Let's do it then. We'll definitely 100%
Daniel Berger. I'm writing Kieran, this down. Right,
we'll
this
check
second.
That. We'll check
Berger's down. Wins.
But no, it was considering the field that was out there, I really enjoyed it. That course is just phenomenal, isn't it? Some of the views. I just
amazing.
Can't. Have you played there before?
Me? No, mad at you.
No, we've been the Masters, haven't you? So I wasn't sure.
Did you know that about that, yeah?
Didn't think there was nothing you haven't done. But
no, it's on the list.
100%. We'll have to get over there.
It's on the list, man.
Anyone listening who's a member there or can get us on, you know where to contact us. At Bogey Boys Pod.
Can you just rock, go and play, can you?
Yeah, you can. Perfect. It's not cheap, though.
It doesn't matter, does it?
Man, I don't know what the waiting list is for tea times as well. I imagine it's going to be quite heavy.
Book us in now. Get us booked in.
Birdie bogey bus time.
Right. Before we start this, do you think we should get a little birdie bogey bus? We've been talking about that. Maybe we should just clip it in.
100%. I said this when we first started. We need a little birdie bogey bus. Birdie bogey bus. Yeah,
start
let's do
a
it.
Few sound effects. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's get it in.
I'll get
there.
To work.
Get to work.
And you get to work. You get to work on that then.
Love making a job for me, don't you? What's your birdie, son?
My birdie is, Dad, is getting to number 4 in the UK golf podcast chart.
Wowza.
I'll give myself a round of applause for that.
I'll give you a round of applause too. Well done, Kev.
Well done.
Unbelievable stuff. Though. It is unbelievable stuff, yeah. It's a proud moment for us as a podcast. We've only been going 6 months. We don't want to milk this, but we're going in.
Why not? Celebrate the wins.
Yeah. Next, where's the next stop, Kev?
Next stop is world domination.
That's it, number one. We're after that number one spot. We're coming for you.
But it's like boxing, isn't it? You've got to defeat the British, then you go to European, then you go to the world.
Where are we now?
There's levels. We're about to just fight for the British title at the minute.
Yeah. And it's on to world domination. Now, and it was when I woke up on Sunday morning to see that, I wouldn't say I was shocked, because I think people are liking the podcast, aren't they? And we're getting good feedback and things. So, again, thanks to everyone for the support on that. It's amazing stuff.
No, thank you very much. We wouldn't do it if no one was listening, would we?
No, definitely not.
I don't know. I do like the sound of my own voice, though. I might still.
You definitely do like that.
What's your birdie then, brother?
Annika Sorenstam.
Pardon?
She's coming out of retirement after 13 years to play in the Gainbridge Championship in Florida.
No way.
Yeah, that's like for the women's sport, that's like the return of Tiger Woods, that. She's the superstar, isn't she? She's won 90 times as a pro, 72 times on the LPGA Tour, and she's also going to play the Women's US Open.
Nice. Imagine she won it.
I know. Well, I think it's 10 majors I think she's won, maybe. Could be more.
Imagine she won it, man.
I know, but you know, she retired in 2008.
Did she?
Yeah. Yeah, I was shocked to see that. I didn't realise she'd been out the game that long yet, but a return after 13 years.
Why did she retire?
It said that she won a 10th major, I think in like 2006, 2007, and 2 years a game just went downhill. And I think it was probably just to save grace.
Yeah, because I know that Lorena Ochoa, she was world number one, wasn't she? Chopping, like winning all sorts, and then she went to be a stay-at-home mum.
Yeah,
wanted to be with the kids and all that. So
yeah, I'm not sure. Do you know I was looking at the wins that she said, and she stopped at 90. I'm thinking surely you're going to carry on to the 100, aren't you?
Oh yeah, definitely.
You wouldn't want to stop at 90, but yeah, 90 professional wins, 72 LPGA Tour wins, and she's returning next week. In the first tournament.
Has she got the most ever?
I would say. I mean, I don't know. I would say so. I've not looked at that.
We'll have to look at that, because if she's already that far ahead, she's probably just thought, ah, let them catch me. And
yeah, but she has got a family now, though, hasn't she? So maybe it was the fact that she wanted to. I think she's got a couple of kids. So maybe it was the fact that she just wants to start a family. She's done all she could.
Yeah.
That's always the battle the women have got, isn't it?
It is. It's hard.
They're the ones who are going to have to go through all that, aren't they? So they have to. Michelle Wee's just had a child, hasn't she? So again, she.
Well, it's not even just the going through it as well. It's once the baby's born, it's like that maternal instinct. You want to be by the mother all the time and going away or taking the kid with it for 4 days. It just doesn't work, does it?
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
That's to take away the body changes and all that sort of stuff they have to go through. So it's a bit of a nightmare, really, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's my birdie for the week. Just thought that was to see the legend back playing. We'll be covering that next week alongside the WGC. So, yeah, be good to see how she gets on.
Very good, yeah.
Hope she does well.
Right, my bogey is the rules of golf, just to do in my head in at the minute.
Go on. Are we talking specifically?
We're talking, that white line that was on the floor, like for Berger's one. And we're talking like that kid's ball just falling.
Even the Russell Knox one. I couldn't believe that. Russell Knox, the exact same thing, addressed the ball moved. And he was told by the rules official at that point, there's no penalty there. And then 3 holes later, the rules official's tracking him down to say, oh, by the way, no, there is a penalty there.
And it's, you know what? And it's not even just rules in golf. It's rules in general, like football, the VAR's gone out the window. They don't know what's going on there. Like rules with regulations in the country, don't know what's going on there. Like nobody seems to know how to make a rule.
Bogey of the Patrick Reed saga as well. He's manipulated that rule to the tilt.
Exactly. So you've got people like poor Maverick there just putting his club down, getting a penalty, and you've got Patrick Reed picking balls up, burying fingers in grasses, like hiding things. The ref confused where's the ball, and then he gets away with it. It's like,
yeah. Well, you could hear what that Maverick was saying, and he said, he turned around and said, if I'm being honest, I don't believe that I have made that ball move. I'll be honest, I don't think I have. But then the rules official said, well, we've checked the video, and just as you're about to put that down, you've touched the blade of grass and the ball's moved forward, so you're having it a shot penalty. And he just took it at fair play.
So they checked the video.
They checked the video.
So why didn't they check the video on Reed's and see that it bounced?
Well, because there was no controversy from the ref. That was the problem. The ref just sided with them and said, yeah, I'm happy with that. He didn't say, oh, I'm not sure. Where is the other fella?
This could even turn into the bust here. So they chase Russell Knox down the fairway and give him a penalty because they got the ruling wrong. But then they can clearly see Patrick Reed cheating on camera and they don't chase him down and give him a penalty.
They couldn't see it, could they? Because he's picked the ball up and then the refs felt that the ground's broken, so it's embedded. So the refs made that call based on him being there and feeling it, where there's no feel involved for Russell Knox and there's no feel involved for Maverick McNealy. So theirs is basically the video shows the ball move. So what they need to determine is, did that player make that ball move or not? If they did, then it's a shot penalty. If they didn't, then it's not. So with McNealy, they were standing there for a couple of minutes talking it through, and the ref was on the radio to people in the room where they were watching it. And then I think another guy come on at the end and he just said, look, we've seen it. As he's put it down, he's touched the blade of grass. And then the ref said, look, as you've touched the grass at the same point, it seems as though you've made that ball move. So because of that, and then even Faldo said, if you're ever unsure, get 3 inches above the ball and just play it like a bunker shot.
Exactly. Yeah.
I thought
the whole thing with the Reed was that the woman said it didn't bounce.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you can check the camera, see it did bounce, and then they realised that it wouldn't have plugged, and then they know that he's a cheating bastard.
But it doesn't, to be honest though, just because it bounces doesn't mean that if it's embedded that you don't get the relief, because it can bounce. It's just for it to bounce and then embed is very, very highly unlikely. But if it's embedded, regardless of whether it bounces beforehand, it doesn't matter. You still get relief. It's just if the ball's embedded at that point.
Yeah, because I think we said last week about that Mark Rowe saying, like, there's no way, impossible, that ball will ever plug off a bounce. 2 seconds later, McIlroy's like, I swear on my life, it bounced and plugged. And he's like, yeah, well, when you believe Rory, so it could well happen.
Well, that's it, yeah. So even though it's bounced before, and they did get a ridiculous amount of rain, didn't they? But no, I agree. It's the uncertainty of a rule, isn't it? And like it just shows, we talked about this last week or the week before with the Reeds saga. It's about integrity in golf, isn't it? It's always about, and Matt McNeely's.
Well, that's it. The integral players are getting killed off, and the cheats are getting more bended of the rules. Like even in club golf, you used to have to see the ball go in the water. Now you can be over 95% sure. And my mate just stood there looking at me. I'm 96% sure that's went in the water there.
I am always 96% sure. Exactly. I'm not gonna lie.
So it's a perfect example is SNA on the, is it the sixth, the par five? Another ninth.
The ninth on the left.
Yeah, and then the water, I'm probably pretty sure it went in there, do you know what I mean? So
yeah, because of the hill. Yeah. No, but the Berger incident as well. I mean, if that's Bryson DeChambeau's ball, what do you think's happening there? There's gonna be 10-15 minutes of back and forth.
Another thing about the Berger incident, he was on the path, his feet were on the path, so he would have got a drop the other side of the path. So he would have put, like, it's Birdieville then.
Yeah, it is Birdieville, yeah. And he comes off with a 7-double bogey because he has to go back to tee. It didn't stop him winning a tournament, but you're right. There's three incidents there.
That's not the point.
Yeah, there's three incidents there, yeah. And then Patrick Reed done what he done and he ends up winning the tournament. And he could potentially have been disqualified. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll get off the rules. Like, that's my bogey anyway. What's yours? What's yours, mate?
Repeat of last week. We spoke about it earlier. It's the Speed saga.
Nah.
Build up. Leads going into the Sunday and then just crucifies you. Three or four holes in, and you're thinking he's two or three back now, and it's like, oh my god, you just don't have the confidence in him at the moment to come from behind three or four shots. But then it got towards the end of the round, and then he gets to one, and I think it's the 14th, the par five, and makes a bogey.
Yeah,
just thinking, oh, where's that come from? It's like on the Saturday as well, in the second hole, he just makes a bogey on the par five out of nowhere.
His putting's on, and then it just turns off, doesn't it?
Well, this is it. This is the frustration, and that's why he's my bogey, because he's not me bust. Like last week, he wasn't me bust because he's nearly there, and it's gonna happen. It is gonna happen over the next couple of weeks. I just know he's gonna win a tournament, but because I want him to win so bad, because I'm a big fan of his, it's me bogey.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you've kept the same bogey because I've kept the same bust. So I literally got my PowerPoint presentation, I deleted it, and I thought, you know what, that is staying as the bust. But I'm add a little bit to it. So it was Spieth not getting the job done is my bust. But more in depth than that, making me put up a video on Instagram saying, guess who's back? Back again.
She's back.
and then it took me ages to edit that. Think he was back and then he goes and blows it again.
It's perfect though, the shape on the tracer. It was like half of a heart just the day before Valentine's Day as well, wasn't it?
I didn't even clock that, yeah.
I think what somebody done an edit and they done it or putting it the other way.
The shot I see the cut.
And it was like a little heart, yeah. Valentine's
Obviously
Day.
A lot more creative than me than on the old computers.
No, it's brilliant that when I seen that was amazing. Yeah. My bust is Nate Lashley. I was going to save the Lashley discussion for the bust, but we've already spoken about it because we had to. But yeah, those extra two putts costing him $500,000.
Oh.
And that's it. At the end of the season, that could be the difference between him getting in the FedEx playoffs, you know, and from 13 foot, it's not so much that he's four-putted because, I mean, they shouldn't four-put, but it does happen. It's the fact that he's putted so well all week and that's not being his weakness. He's putted so well and he goes and four puts from 13 foot.
I think, like, if me or you or a 25 handicapper four putted from 13 foot, it'd be the bust.
Yeah.
Never mind the tour pro.
I was sort of going to give him the birdie for not snapping every single club in his bag.
So give him the bust for not throwing himself in the lake, to be honest.
So he's done well on 18 not to just lash that in the Pacific.
Oh my god.
You should have Lashley'd that straight into the Pacific.
Lashley did. He didn't, did he?
So yeah, the birdie bogey bust.
That's it, brother.
Another week passes us by. Another interesting good, bad and ugly. But it leads us nicely on to Ryder Cup season, Ryder Cup 1953.
Ryder Cup-itis, as they keep saying on Sky.
Ryder Cup-itis. It's the year, isn't it? It's going to be a big build-up. We're going to keep talking about it, and we move on a couple of years now to 1953 at the Wentworth Club.
Yeah, interestingly, I've seen that this one was in October, and like the last British one was in September, and then a different the months keep moving.
The American one was in November as well.
And one of them was in September. Like one of them was in a different month as well.
I think it goes back to the point that we made last week, is that they just weren't really bothered about the Ryder Cup. I don't think back then missing days out, so they go and watch a college football game.
Exactly. Yeah, it's getting closer though, isn't it? The scores.
It is. This one was very close. Yeah, and the finish on this one as well. God rest his soul. It was a debut for Peter Alliss, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to say the average age for the Great British team was 35, and he was 22. So he's bringing that average down considerably, isn't he?
Yeah, there was him at 22, and there was another English guy. I can't remember his name. He was 23. Is it Hunt? Was it Benjamin? Someone Hunt. And he played
Mike. I think it was Mike Hunt.
Say that fast 3 times. But no, it was good. It was at the Wentworth Club. We were still with the 12-point format, so two foursomes. I think this ran up to 1959. It was 61 when it changed to the format that we're dealing with now. But interestingly, the British team was selected by a committee this time. So
all right.
They had trial matches the weeks before, and then the committee picked the final 10 players. So it was two teams of 10.
Anyone could just try out like for the Ryder Cup.
Yes, no. I think the committee selects 17 players.
Oh, right.
And out of those 17 players, they go and do a trial. It was at the Wentworth Club as well, so it was good for the practice before the tournament. And then the committee,
not a bad shout.
Yeah, the committee.
So use gelling, so use working, like that's what they should do, man.
Yeah, it is. Not a bad shout at all. Yeah. So, but then the Americans team, they were a points based system. So the winner of the PGA Championship in 52 and 53 got automatic place.
Yeah.
And then the other 8 places were based on the top point scorers, so similar to the way it is now. Apart from that, now you've got the captain's picks as well, and the majors not involved. So it's just interesting to see how it all went down.
Yeah, well, another interesting point is they had an Irishman in this one as well. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, an Irish player. Well, it's Great Britain, isn't it? Ireland's not part of Great Britain. Okay. So this is where they must have changed it from to Great Britain and Ireland this year.
Oh, GB&I.
Doesn't actually say that, but it's called Great Britain. It says Great Britain on all the things that you read. But Team there Great is an Britain. Irishman in there. The reason, I think, being for that is he won 10 Irish PGA championships.
And he just threw him in?
Harry Bradshaw.
I wonder how that conversation went down then. Do you mind if we just bring an Irishman?
I'll tell you why they might have done it. In the 1949 Open Championship, right, he lost in a playoff to Bobby Locke at St. George's. And what happened was he hit his ball into the fairway on the fifth, and it come to rest against a piece of glass off a broken bottle. And he, instead of getting relief, which he could have got, he just played it, and it only went about 20 yards, and he ended up losing, but like, ended up getting into a playoff, and that cost him, inevitably.
So why has he done that?
Oh, obviously, lunatic, isn't he? But
I thought you were going to come with one of your smart ones then. Well, I wasn't there.
It just says rather than taking a drop, which he would have been entitled to, he elected to play and only moving slightly forward. And that's got him, he ended up getting into a playoff and ended up losing.
Very strange. Very, very strange.
So I think they felt sorry for him, and they've said, right, you know what, because you've done that with the bottle, come join the Ryder Cup, son.
Yeah, feel sorry for you. Yeah, but it was like we say, it was 6.5, 5.5. So it was the closest one that we've spoke about yet. And we actually, the British team actually had a putt on 18 to win the final match, and it would have tied up the tournament at 6 apiece, and it would have been a tie. But he missed his putt, and it handed it to the USA. So it seems like this is the first one that got a.
Well, it wasn't him, was it?
What?
It wasn't him, was it, Bradshaw?
It was Hunt. It was Mike Hunt.
Mike Hunt.
Bernard Hunt, his name is. 23-year-old Bernard Hunt.
Right. Well, so a rookie then as well?
He was a rookie as well, yeah. So it was actually Peter Alice and Bernard Hunt. They needed 1.5 points in the last two matches to win it. Alice lost his match down 18, and then Hunt had a put on 18 to win his match, to half the match, and then he gets...
It just shows you, but the strategy of having your strongest players as your anchor, not rookies, has cost them.
There you go. That is, yeah. But they've had the experience from the tail end, and they could have actually won that one. But another one to the USA as we move on next week.
Well, six in a row.
Six in a row now, yeah.
Yeah.
We get one eventually. I don't know what happens next year, but watch this space. We'll be back onto it.
Yeah.
Golf this week, the Genesis Invitational.
Yeah. I know I said I was going to come with a big fact check about them getting the extra stands and the extra tickets for Tiger Woods, but it seems to be evading me, that information on the internet, but it's definitely true. So you're just going to have to take my word for it.
Well, he's the host, isn't he? Tiger hosts that event, yeah. So I know he played last year, didn't he? Made the cut, but I think he finished dead last after the cut. So
no, a donkey did around him.
Yeah, but Dustin Johnson returns. This is going to be the second time he's teed it up on American soil since the Masters.
Hey!
He won back here in 2017 as well. So
nice,
another one that we could be looking to back in the picture.
I don't see how he loses. I just really don't.
I know. And I had a look at the course as well, and obviously watching this over the years, there's just trees everywhere. It's definitely a driver's course.
That's it, and like tee to green, there's no one better.
No, and if he's worked on that putting for those 30 minutes that you were talking about last week, then we could see him.
Yeah, I can't believe he didn't send in his video from doing the Bogey Boys Challenge, to be honest. Yeah, he didn't do that.
But it's a big week for a number of reasons. Anyone not already in the WGC at Concession next week, if they can make it into the top 10, they'll get a spot.
There it's good, isn't it? So it's a lot to pay for, isn't it?
Lot to play for, yeah. That's what I was saying about Lashley last week. You know, that could be the difference between getting in these WGC events, those four putts.
Well, yeah, it is, isn't it? Like, that's costing them in so many different ways, and mentally as well, having a four putt would be killing, like, beating himself up over, didn't he?
Well, if he plays well again this week and he misses out by a couple of shots from getting to the WGC, and then he misses out on the FedEx at the end of the year because he didn't play that WGC and would have got X amount of cash for it. It's the rope, but you can't think like that. He won't be thinking like that.
No, you can't. But
the statistics speak for themselves, don't they?
Yeah, that's it. I tell you, you know, speaking of big weeks, Willie Mack, there he is.
I heard about him. He got in because of the COVID situation with Kamayu Johnson, didn't he?
Oh, did he get that as well? I just know that he's got... Tiger Woods gives the Charlie Sifford exemption to one player at this event every year. And he's got it this year.
Did he get it? Yeah. I know he did play in the Farmers Insurance, missed the cut. Kamayu Johnson was meant to play in it, and he got a positive COVID test. So Mach got in.
I don't know too much on him, to be honest. I was trying to find a bit on him, but I couldn't. But I just know that he's getting the exemption this week, so it's
one to watch.
Yeah, but you've got to be in it to win it, haven't you?
Yeah. Do we know what that exemption's for? Is it just sponsor's pick? Is it?
It's just Tiger picks it. Tiger ends up gives it out.
All right. Okay.
I don't know what exactly he's for. All I could read of it that he played 27 holes at Riviera last week behind Happy Gilmore, behind Adam Sandler. behind Adam Sandler, who is Happy Gilmore.
There you go, yeah. Yeah. Adam Scott won here last year.
Yeah.
Got vengeance from his 2016. It was rained off after 36 holes and he was leading, but he wasn't given the title at the tournament finish. He just got cancelled for that year. And interesting about conditions playing a big part this week. It does get wet, so it's looking like it's going to be a bomber's course, this one.
Playing into DJ's hands,
exactly, yeah.
Because as we find out every week, you can't just bomb it. You've got to be accurate as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, interesting about the rain and the weather. In 2001, after 72 holes, the Riviera Country Club holds the record for most players in the playoff. Six of them went at it.
Really?
Yeah, six of them went at it after 72 holes. It was a tie, and it was lashing down, and they all went out before the night coming in.
Well, man, seeing a little bit of a playoff this week. I've met a couple of big boys like DJ against Bryson or something mad up there, boss playoff.
Bryson and Brooks, I'd like to see.
Yeah, and DJ get a lot of them in there.
Fitzpatrick, see if he says anything to Brooks. Or Bryson, sorry.
Well, didn't he all got things on the big straightener on the 18th or whatever he played?
Bryson just squashed them all, only. Yeah, exactly. But the Riviera Country Club, par 71, 7,322 yards. It's hosted three majors. The last one was the 99 PGA Championship, so it hasn't hosted one for a while. The standout holes, on the sixth hole, it's a par three, and you've got a bunker in the middle of the green.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. I've seen a few people chipping over it.
Yeah, chip over that. So be interesting to see what comes of that hole this week. It's only a short, about 165 yards, the par three, so...
Yeah. It's just making more work for themselves if they put another thing there, because they know the pros are going to chip over it anyway. Obviously, they're expecting pros not to hit that side of the green, but it happens, doesn't it? So
yeah,
just open yourself up to put a wedge mark in your green, aren't you?
Definitely, yeah. Green staff will be at it this week, especially if it rains as well. It does get wet. A few chunks.
Imagine a sloppy flop shot after the middle of the green.
That's where you would take a four-putt, innit?
Yeah.
Put around the bunker.
Around it.
Yeah. And then you've got the 10th hole, which is a drivable par 4, only 304 yards. Jack Nicklaus has actually come out and said it's one of the best 10th holes in major golf. I mean, you consider the 10th at Augusta as well.
Yeah.
But it's a fiddly bastard. Trees everywhere. So, like I've said, it's going to play into the more accurate drivers. And if it's wet, take that into consideration. It's not the shortest of courses. And you're finishing with a 478-yard par 4.
61 the course record. I'm going to throw another mad one out there of that. It's going to get beat that. I reckon someone's going to hit a 60.
No way. I'll take that. 11 under,
yeah,
in one day. No. I'll take that bet. How much?
Tenner.
Okay, I'll take that bet.
Lovely.
Let's do that.
I just got these feelings, don't I? But they've mainly been wrong.
That's why I'm betting your money.
Yeah. I'm sure you owe me a tenner anyway.
Double or quits, we'll go. The field is unbelievable. You've got everybody there this week.
Everybody.
Everybody. DJ's back, which you mentioned before. Adam Scott's there to defend his crown. You've got Big Bryson's teeing it up. Brooks Koepka after a week off after his win. Daniel Berger after his win. Casey. Fitzpatrick's there.
I tell you, you've got another top player. Top player. Molinari.
Have we missed that?
Absolutely. I was watching it with Dave, though. Do you know what he said? He was like, look at his left foot, and his left foot comes off the ground. You know, like all these are trying to do now with that new distance thing where they lift it, like what that Berkshire does, lifts the left side up and then transfers the weight.
All right.
Dave reckoned he was trying to get more distance.
He's never been a big hitter. He's always been consistently straight. That's what's always been strong about his game, is he just doesn't miss fairways. Fairways to green, he's tee to green, he's amazing.
And then he goes looking for that extra 10, 20 yards. And how many players have we seen, we've talked about, with it messing them up?
Well, there's not much more messing up than you're getting than topping it.
On the track, on the scope, what's it called, the top tracing as well.
He's so lucky there wasn't a full field of fans there, because that was on the first tee. One of the last outs on the team, Francesco Molinari with a flat top.
Yeah, he's back again this week.
Yeah, he's there as well, yeah. And you've got Maverick McNealy, Justin Thomas, John
Morikawa,
Ram.
Morikawa.
It's massive, I can't wait. To be honest, this is it. Now, this is the start of the build-up to the Masters. This is where we really get excited, isn't it? You've got this week, next week, you've got the WGC, at the Concession Club, and then you've got Bay Hill, then you've got the Players, I think you might have one more in Florida, I can't remember off the top of my head. Then you have, is it the Houston Open? And then we've got the Masters.
Sickest.
It's just non-stop.
I've just clocked another one for our one to watch segment that we could start getting into, do a little fact of like what we've done on the Batia today. Tyler Strafasi. He's the US amateur champion, and he gets a spot in this, in the Genesis.
Oh, does he? Interesting, yeah. Is he still amateur, or is he turned professional now?
Not too sure, just he's teased up alongside the last three winners, Doc Redman, Victor Hovland, and the Ogletree. So if he hasn't turned pro, or if he has, he'll still be young, won't he? So, and you've never heard of him, I've never heard of him. So
keep an eye on him.
Fact find on him for next week.
One to watch. Let's keep that segment going. I like that one.
I do, man.
So it was an interesting week on the Order of Merit this week. You've taken me again.
Yes, have I?
Yeah.
Really, I thought I had a shocker.
You did, but I had an even shocker.
I had the top 10, though, didn't I?
You did, yeah. So it was a low-scoring week overall. Not many people picked up many points. The top scorer was 55. And then low scorer was minus 30, but we won't name that person.
Why?
It's your Kieran.
Hey, Kieran actually texted me saying, I think I've been picking off the European tour, have I? Can you check?
Because we're having the PGA now. Yeah. So you scored 18 points. You picked the Hoff, Charlie Hoffman. You got your... in pot two in the top 10, and he got 3 bonus points as well for coming second in driving distance for the week.
Yeah, the Hofster, man.
Picked up some good points. Yeah, and then the rest. Who did you pick?
Siwoo Kim.
He missed the cut, didn't he?
Peter Uihlein. Yeah. And I think Dustin Johnson. Can't remember who Johnson.
You should get minus points for coming dead last.
Nah, man,
I got minus five for the week, terrible. Who one. I had Jordan Spieth, and then the other three missed the cut. So Jordan Spieth got me a top 10, and the rest of them just failed miserably. 3 missed cuts.
Well, I'll tell you what you told me once. I think you should start putting a bit more thought into this.
Well, talking about thought, let's have your picks.
Right. Obviously, DJ.
I knew you'd do that. I haven't picked him this week. I knew you would. I knew you'd just jump on that. I hope he misses the cut. But go on.
Hang on a minute. All I speak about is how can he lose, and I'm not going to pick him.
I know, but you know, go on.
The Hofster, because he stepped me in good stead this week.
Yeah, Charlie Hoffman.
Interesting one. And I can't believe he's pot three. Dylan Fratelli. No, he hasn't been doing much since the Masters, but I'm going to Fratelli.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't really played. Has he played, though? Has he played much?
That's what I mean. I don't think he has. I haven't really heard him or seen him about, so...
I don't remember seeing him at the Desert Swing.
No, he must have took his money on at the Masters and just ran with it.
Pot four.
A golden oldie. Stuart Sink.
What a man. Right.
He could pot four winning him.
He's a recent winner, isn't he? He's won this season.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, interesting picks. I've gone for Justin Thomas.
Nice.
I think he's so good off the tee, and if it gets wet and tight, then I think you could rely on him with his distance. And he finished second here in 2019. So,
why not
pick him? Yeah, pot two, I've gone for Maverick McNealy because he McNealy won. Don't know how many more times I can use that, but there you go. Started last week, unlucky with the penalty shot, and in other weeks, he might have actually won. So,
yeah,
Maverick McNealy in pot two. Pot three, Peter Malnati. He's a bit of a legend, isn't he? And I keep an eye on him because he is a legend, and he's always up there. You know, he always starts with like a 4 or 5 under day one.
No, he does. He is always about. He's wanting to make the cut, isn't he?
That's what I'm backing him, yeah. I'm backing him for a cut maker, yeah. So, and then finally, Troy Merritt. 9 under, tied 16th last week. So he's hit a bit of form, pretty similar to my Maverick McNealy pick.
Yeah.
Haven't really done much this season, but played well last week. So I'm just hoping for a cut made there.
That's
my picks.
Well, you got minus points last week, so you're going to be hoping for something.
I know. With me pot one making top 10, Spieth, I was leading through day three. I thought, here we go. And then I checked.
Here we go.
I was thinking, I wonder how many others are getting on, and all three of them missed the cut. I was like, for fuck's sake. No, but really interesting week of golf to look forward to. The Genesis Invitational, and then we've got just unbelievable golf.
I can't wait.
From now until the Masters.
Just any word on Tiger being back, like, or what?
He's gonna
any he said, word on him?
Nothing. He's just gone quiet. He said,
he's there this week.
He will be there, yeah.
He's going to be there, yeah. So hopefully someone collars him and asks him that, you know. That'd be hopefully boss.
Get a bit of insight into what's going on. We'll be able to see how he's walking and that.
Honestly, sure. If I see him travelling around in a buggy with a back brace on or something, I'm going to do someone in.
Just don't do yourself in.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
But look, another amazing podcast, another amazing...
I loved it.
Love these every week, mate. And like you say, we'll be back for more next week to review the Genesis Invitational and to look forward to the Double GC and the start of the LPGA Tour as well.
That's it, brother.
The Gainbridge in Florida. So it's all happening in Florida.
Good few weeks coming up. Can't wait to talk about them, to be honest.
Yeah, but again, until next week, we hope you all enjoyed the show and we'll catch you soon.
Ciao.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh boy, is he out of sync.